I asked, do you have a man? She tried to pretend. She said, no, I don't. I only have a friend.
Baby. You got what I need. You got what I need. You say he's just a friend. But baby, you say he's just a friend. Oh, baby, you got what I need. Bismarcky.
Yeah, that's a nice introduction to the faux show for everybody. There you go, our terrible songs. Us singing. Oh, man. It's the eye of the tiger. It's the thrill of the fight. Anyway.
I finished watching the first season of Game of Thrones last night.
Okay, cool.
So, Naked Chick with Three Dragons. Yes. And Fade to Black.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Thoughts about... And, you know, I
so, you already, so, spoilers. You already knew that Ned was going to die, right?
I didn't know that he was going to die. I mean, I'm behind... I got some Zamoa. The book... I'm not ahead on the book, right? I'm behind on the book still.
Right. Of course. It's the audiobook that takes 26 hours.
Yeah. It's insane. But on the book, I'm... I actually have only listened to it in two little segments so far, so I'm just to the point where they beheaded the guy who deserted the Black Knight.
Okay, you know,
the,
yeah.
Black Knights, or what's called? The Knights of the
Night's Watch.
Night's Watch, right. So, you know, I'm just at that point, which is, you know, what, 10 minutes into the first episode is as far as I am in the audiobook. Mm-hmm. I like it. They're mixing. I mean, it mixes shit up. You know, it's not like, you know, the purple people they establish early on don't necessarily live very long. Mm-hmm. You know, and things like that. So, you know, there's a lot of angst filled children that are going to be trying to reclaim their parents' pride and glory and stuff.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that seems like that's going to be a theme going on. You got all the Starks. You got the. I can't think of the blonde haired girl's Lannisters. Family name. No, well, there's the Lannisters, but the Dragon Lady. What's her family name? Targaryens. That's it. And yeah, you know, lots. And then King Joffrey.
Baratheon.
Yeah, King Joffrey is going to. I don't know. I'd be surprised if he lives to a ripe old age.
Kind of a douche.
He's gonna have his mom killed eventually, it seems. Or he's gonna fuck her, one or the other. Greg's trying not to spoil anything since I'm a season and a half behind or whatever, but
well, you're a book in it. Well, you haven't even read. I mean, but in terms of book wise, you're a book and a half behind. You're two seasons behind. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I won't say anything, but yeah. I'm glad that you like it.
I do. You know, I had those comments last week. Nothing else has taken me out of the story. You know, like the things I talked about, you know, last time with the gold and the jousting. Mostly the gold. All the other stuff I've been fine with. And, yeah, I mean, it's HBO telling, you know, a fantasy story with enough character development and plot detail that, you know, transcends the fantasy elements, I guess.
Yeah, and also it's not your typical fantasy story. It's not Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much not Lord of the Rings. It's much more War of the Roses than it is Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just there's also magical elements involved. But I mean, even those are dangerous.
You know, like, so I've only listened to the audiobook for, you know, a few minutes so far, but, you know, like, John and Rob? You know, they're only 14 in the book.
Yeah.
You know, and they're 18 to 22 on the show.
Well, mostly because, like same thing with Daenerys. He's mm-hmm. 13 in the book when you get to her. And obviously they can't do nude scenes with a 13-year-old and sex scenes with a 13-year-old. So they're...
But I mean, if Rob and Jon Snow make the same decisions and do the same actions at 14... You know, it's a different story, really.
Sort, yeah.
I mean, it's a different story
to us because we culturally see them as older. But I mean, at the time, at least from the medieval perspective, that was adult. You know, you were at your sort of adult time when you reached 13, 14. You were, I mean, 30 was like.
Yeah, ancient. I mean, Lord Stark is what, 35, yeah. Right? So. Why aren't we lords, damn it?
We just, because we're wage slaves, my friend. Mm. We are wage slaves. I was having a discussion with Damien the other night that we were like, that he was praising Linus Torvalds for the first time ever. Because Linus Torvalds was being kind of a dick to somebody who was trying to change the colonel and being like a very Steve Jobsian type dick. And he was saying, and Damien was saying, you know, I finally respect Linus Torvalds now. And I was like, you respect him for being a dick? And he's like, well, yeah, because look at all the, you know, great dicks, the Steve Jobs, etc., that have been successful. And like, well, I think that's either that is more the exception than the rule, that dicks, you know, become powerful and so they stick out, or it's a sad commentary on society that dicks are powerful. That to be powerful, to really control, to really get a huge amount of capital and money, you had to be a huge dick to everybody.
I think that capitalism breeds dicks. I mean, don't you think?
I mean, yeah, and I think it's a problem. I think that especially, you know, lately.
I mean, big capitalism, right? Like yeah. The bankers and shit, right? I mean, it definitely breeds dicks. I mean, you just got to watch, you know, the Boiler Room to learn, you know, to learn that.
And yeah, I mean, at least the way that we see people be successful, the way that is advertised, the way that is that people recognize, the way that successful people become known is either by being dicks or being extremely charismatic. And there are plenty more successful people who are neither dicks nor incredibly charismatic, who are just still successful. But the ones that become known are either huge dicks or successful or very charismatic. Like, I don't think Jeff Bezos is a particularly a dick, but he's a very charismatic individual. He's the Amazon dude. But you know, your Steve Jobs is your Steve Ballmer's, your
Larry Ellison's.
Pretty much dicks, and it's a sad commentary on society.
Warren Buffett seems like a nice guy.
Maybe
he doesn't seem too dicky. You don't know, or are you?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know. I can't say one way or the other. So
the newsroom started up. You watching the newsroom season two?
I would rather shoot myself in the head. I've seen all the stuff about it. I mean, I read about it because there's a part of me that genuinely dislikes Aaron Sorkin, which is weird because I love Dan Harmon, and they're kind of two aspects. They're kind of two sides of the same coin, right? But I feel like Dan Harmon is more human than Aaron Sorkin.
No, it makes sense. It makes sense. You saw the Aaron Sorkin on The Daily Show, right?
Yeah.
Where they broke the studio.
Right. Well, that was just John Oliver being awesome. I mean, like, Aaron Sorkin, I think, works great with adapted material, but writing his own stuff, he's just awful.
That's why the newsroom works so good. He's using shit from last year, the year before, but he, you know, like you said on The Daily Show, he likes the dynamic where the audience knows more than the characters about what's going to happen, so they kind of see how it develops and see how mistakes are made, things like that. Maybe that's kind of...
I don't buy it. First of all, every critic that I know hate watches The Newsroom. And it's because they find it just to be just sort of all the awful tendencies of Aaron Sorkin. And somebody at one of them, I think it was Vulture or Hollywood Reporter or something, pointed out that it's not necessarily hate watching, it's more disappointment watching. It's like, we know you can do better. I mean, we're watching this and we're just being constantly let down. by what's happening on screen.
Oh, okay.
Because it's you know, like Studio 60, right? Everyone loved The West Wing, and then Studio 60, like, oh, and Studio 60 is just horrible. It's just a piece of awful, self-indulgent claptrap. And that's what people are saying about The Newsroom. Oh, you know, look at how wonderful they can be with 2020 hindsight. How they can be an awesome newsroom when they're talking about stuff that happened 2 years ago. Yeah, yeah, it's amazing. You can say, wow, you know, we should have done this better, and meant these guys did.
I mean, I think in this season they're going to make some mistakes, right? And, you know, the viewer hindsight will be like, oh, don't do that. Oh, wrong turn. You know, that could be kind of engaging. I don't know. I can't imagine how it could be, right?
It could be. It probably would be nice if they did something along those lines, or like where they really went down a wrong turn, where they really went down a big rabbit hole, and then they have to climb out of it. Mm-hmm. But I think they're just going to have one thing that went wrong, but everything else is going to go well. And then, of course, there's always the situation where Aaron Sorkin can't write female characters. He just can't. He's horrible at it, and so he writes he writes good actresses like Alison Pill and Emily Mortimer, and he writes them the horrible schlock that makes them like, oh, I'm a woman, I can't handle myself, blah, 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 blah. I need a strong man in my life. That's very Sorkin.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, so I'm going to tear through the next couple seasons of Game of Thrones, watch that Arrested Development season. And
I will say about this about the Arrested Development season, it takes time to get to get started, because everything has this. It's actually a pretty interesting and complex story, but the first couple ones you're like, I want it to be like it was before, but really they become better after you get past a certain point. I think it's really the third or fourth episode where it starts to kind of click in what the heck's going on. And then it kind of builds.
You get to reintroduce yourself to the... I watched probably the first 10, 15 minutes of the first episode. It was really late. I just wanted to click it on. I'm like, yeah. And, you know, it was certainly an unorthodox reintroduction, you know, the way they did it. Some of it was kind of reintroduction. Some of it wasn't. But you had to...
Well, I think the general feeling is that if you're going into the fourth season, you're going into it knowing the other three seasons. So, well,
there's
going
to be a lot of people that haven't watched the three seasons in 6 years. So
there are going to be a lot of people. Yeah, but there aren't going to be a lot of people who haven't watched the three seasons at all.
I didn't remember. I can't remember where they left off. I can't remember.
Yeah. So they have to reintroduce that part.
But you remember the characters. You remember what Job's like. What? Right. And then, you know, the teenage characters are so much older now.
Yeah.
So that's a big difference.
Well, they did make it contemporary, right? They made it so that what's going on now is what's going on like 6 years after the fact. So. But they still do have flashbacks of that time 6 years ago.
Right. Yeah, like I said, I just kind of watched the first act of the first episode. And then, like, because I just wanted to watch, see what, I wanted to see my friends again, you know? And then I'm like, okay, it's too late. I need to go to bed, so.
What else? Kind of at a loss. I mean, we just had a show a couple of days ago, so. Not a huge amount to talk about. We talked about a lot of it on the pre-show.
Yeah, I wasn't collecting notes yet. It's been a really busy week for me at work.
Now, why do we have to do the show Wednesday?
So let's see. What day are you leaving for?
Saturday.
Saturday. Yeah. So I thought I had something. When we scheduled this, I had something going on Friday, but now I'm not sure what it is. And then tomorrow... Well, there's a happy hour at work tomorrow, but that's not the reason. I thought there was something else. Actually, and I've been home late every night this week, so I'm not sure Heather's going to let me go to the happy hour at work tomorrow anyway. Something's going on Friday. I'll have to ask Heather. She schedules my weekends mostly, so... But yeah, Saturday, Sunday, I know we're booked up, and I guess probably sure we're doing something Friday night too.
People wonder why I'm not married.
It's nice not having to schedule your weekends. It's done for you.
That's that's like, if I may be brutally honest here.
I know what you're going to say. I'm just having fun.
That's like a slave saying, oh, my master says everything to him for me. So it's nice not having to worry about that stuff.
Well, I don't have to worry about my weekends, and I can go up and have sex right after the show. How about that?
Can you? If you can see the look on Jeff's face.
We'll see. It's funny. She asked me this morning, you know, when are you, Greg, doing the show? I'm like, tonight. Good thing you asked, so I could tell you. And then tonight, I come down here, put the show up. She comes down, look, what are you doing? I'm like, you watch TV? I'm like, no, Greg's coming down. I'm like, what? So she didn't hear the answer. She was horny tonight. She wanted to have sex. So maybe I can still get some tonight. Mm. So there's a possibility.
It's a possibility.
Possibility. It's, you know, it's going to be midnight by the time I get up there. So,
but the point is,
it's diminishing.
The point is that it's when she's horny, not when you're horny.
Well, if it's only when I'm horny, it's a lot more work. If it's when she's horny, there's not much work. You just get right into it. She's not horny. You gotta start out slow. You gotta get the engine revved up.
Uh-huh.
Takes a lot. You know, takes some effort. And like, you know, typical married person, like, yeah, it's not worth the effort tonight. So, you know, I got kids that are fun.
Yeah, sex is not the whole meaning of the world anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's not that huge a deal. People who act like it is everything are severely missing out on the rest of the stuff that's out there.
This isn't a big thing, but it's something I noticed a couple of days ago. Up until this summer, you know, kids were so much work. So at the end of the day, I'm just like, go to bed. I need some time off, right? So, you know, putting them to bed was no big deal because I just was really looking forward to the time after they were in bed. Most of this summer, they're not as much work when they're awake anymore. I'm really hating bedtime. They're not hard to put to bed, but I'm like, oh, I gotta change clothes, I gotta brush teeth, I'm sick of bedtime. Like, really sick of bedtime. So, like, their bedtime is later and later in the summer. They're out playing as long as it's light out and stuff. I'm like, not in a hurry to get them to bed. It's just an evolution of like, but oh, I'm really hating bedtime right now. And I'm sure I'll get past that. Yeah. And, you know, when they can do their own teeth brushing and put their own PJs on, it won't be as big of a deal. Just a little thing. Some of the parents that are listening will appreciate that, I'm sure. But
I mean, you know, like I said, appreciate these times because once they mm-hmm. become 13, 14, they're not going to want anything to do with you.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're going to pretend that they do, and they're not really going to want anything to do with you. They're going to have their own deal.
Right.
And you're going to be sort of separated from them.
Mm-hmm.
The whole connection between you and them kind of fades away.
Right.
And then they start to look at you as the silly person.
Stupid dad doesn't know anything.
It's just like, as opposed to you looking at them like, God, dumb kid. Of course you can't ride your roller coaster. You ride your... ride your wagon down the street.
Yeah. Wrap this up. I gotta get laid. Or try to get laid.
All right. I will acquiesce and let Jeff try to get his rocks off in the way he appreciates. So thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you in 2 weeks, week and a half, whatever it is. And we'll be back.
We will. We're too stubborn to quit.
Mm. Cheers.